watches. I ride in this wind on my good horse. I call you my shiny black bears to the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody else.
You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, Free Radio Asheville, WZKW Kingsville, WRFN Nashville, KRBS Oroville, The Surge 96.3, Radio Veronica US, WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, or WMRW Warren. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. The winds have died down and the floodwaters have receded, but the nightmare is far from over for the people of New Orleans, especially the people in the city's Ninth Ward. After being left to drown on their rooftops, herded into a convention center without food and water, derided as looters when they tried to find their own, and prevented from escaping to safety from the flooded city by white cops from the suburbs, they were then sent away on buses with one-way tickets. Now they're trying to return home in the face of a business and government alliance that wants to exile them forever and turn their old neighborhood into an upscale tourist mecca. Grassroots relief organizations have formed in New Orleans and in the communities where the exiles are living, and thousands of volunteers have answered the cry for help and solidarity with New Orleans' perpetually second-class citizens. This week, we'll hear from some of these people. Anna Ritter of Ithaca, New York, is one of those who answered the call. She's been in New Orleans since last October, working with the Common Ground Relief Collective. We spoke to her in New Orleans via cell phone, and we'll begin the program by hearing an overview of the situation from her. The reception is very dicey, so please excuse the sound quality.
My name is Anna Ritter. I'll just talk a little bit about the collective that I'm working with and speak a little bit about the work that we're doing here. And that's mostly a lot of direct on-the-ground relief. And it was started on September 5th by a New Orleans resident named Malik Rahim and several other residents and friends who decided to come together and form a collective called Common Ground to provide immediate relief and strive towards a goal of creating social justice in an area that historically had really received a lot of injustice from local authorities and from the federal government and a lack of assistance from the government and the city in terms of funding. The collective was started, and a call was put out to people around the country to come down and gather supplies to distribute to people who had evacuated from across the river over to the West Bank of New Orleans, where that area had not received any flood damage, and so many people had gone over there to live, and so Malik set up a distribution of food and water and cleaning supplies, just very immediate necessities to the people there. And from that, it grew into a collective that established a free clinic on that side of the river. And as it grew more, the collective started going into the areas that were heavily flooded, severely neglected before, during, and after the storm, and going door to door to flyer and to reach out to residents to tell them that this collective has the intent of supporting them if they do wish to return home, support them in meeting the immediate need, but also assisting them in legal support and the other political situations that were had a had begun and continue on to this day. And we went into a neighborhood in New Orleans called the Ninth Ward. It's the biggest ward in the city of New Orleans, and also it's historically a black neighborhood that has a history of police brutality, underfunding of the schools, and underfunded health care. And that's the area where people were left on their rooftops for days without food or water, and where people were shot at for, you know, supposedly looting when they were just trying to sustain themselves, save the lives of themselves and their neighbors. And so we went into that area, and we set up a distribution similar to the one in Malik's yard, and we began to meet with residents and supply the immediate kind of things that sort of brought an anchor to that community and really allowed the residents a place to come and meet with other people they hadn't seen since the storm and, you know, gather up some food and some things that they would need in order to assist them in returning home. We also established a free clinic there and a center for women from the neighborhood who were coming back and needed a place to stay temporarily because really there weren't many other solutions besides staying in their cars or in moldy houses unless they were able to get a hotel room. But that in itself was tricky because of all the things that FEMA put people through. So since then, people have really been coming back to the Upper Ninth Ward, and now really the biggest, most heated situation is across the Industrial Canal, which runs from Lake Pontchartrain in the north down to the Mississippi, and it connects the two. And that area was flooded because the lake, when the wind from the hurricane came in, it pushed all the water from the lake up into the canal, and it flooded down through the canal towards the Mississippi and through other canals. And that's when the levees that were put there in order to stop the water from running into the neighborhoods broke. And that's why those areas were the most heavily flooded. And some of those areas had flooding up to the rooftops. And so even people who escaped to their rooftops, some of them were washed away just because the water was so strong. So right now, the Lower Ninth Ward, which is one of the older neighborhoods, an older black neighborhood in New Orleans that really is sort of in the direct path of the real estate developers and the insurance companies who want to come in to develop the area. Before the storm, it was a neighborhood about 2 square miles. Many of them were homeowners who had inherited those houses from their parents or grandparents, and they had lived there for their whole lives. And so the community was very close and very strong and very unique culturally, traditionally. And now that area, because for the most part, many people were low income, the insurance companies sort of have a very devious plan to try and buy up that land from the residents, because the city has said that they're going to have the levees finished for a level 3 hurricane by 2012. So that means that there's, you know, 6 hurricane seasons in the way of that. So that means until then, there's no protection from the canal, which means that again and again, those houses would continue to be flooded. So the city put out a proposal that they would buy the homes for 100% of the value before Katrina. If residents decided they didn't want to sell, they would be able to give them some kind of a grant to rebuild their homes at their own risk, though, and not receive any funding next year from FEMA or from the insurance companies if they flooded again. So a lot of the residents in that area are really still intending to keep their homes, and so that right now is really a struggle that we're all facing.
Do you know if any such offers were made to residents in any other part of the city? Or is this something only that's been directed at these residents in the Ninth Ward?
For the most part, it's been offered to people in the Ninth Ward and the lower Ninth Ward particularly, because that's the area that has been so undecided, so up in the air. And the other places, it's really not so much of an issue as to whether or not people are going to be able to keep their homes, because people are in other areas where they're receiving FEMA trailers so that they can put the trailers in their yards while they work on their houses, leave the lower ninth, because people haven't been able to get FEMA trailers down there because there's no electricity. Only recently was the water on, and there's no gas, nothing like that. So it's really, down there is really the area that has been proposed for this agreement.
Okay, now what explanation are authorities giving for failure to get electricity and those essential services there after all this time?
The officials, if they do give any excuse at all, it's because they're broke. They're not getting funding from the U.S. government, and so they've been speaking about sectioning off different parts of New Orleans to different countries, and allowing them to take on the role of rebuilding. And so,
different countries.
They propose that different countries will take different areas, and they will fund the rebuilding of that area. For instance, the Treme neighborhood of New Orleans, which is sort of between Mid-City and the French Quarter, will be given to France to finance and to help with its restoration, because Mayor Ray Nagin has said that there's no money for them to all do it themselves.
And these other countries, what sort of quid pro quo is involved?
Well, that's all very fishy, and it's hard to get exact information, because the information that we're hearing through the news is that they're going to be helping in rebuilding. And that's all very sketchy, because the language that they're using, you know, in terms of the areas they're talking about rebuilding, like the lower Ninth Ward, their proposed rebuilding is to create mixed-income neighborhoods, meaning housing for rich people, and green spaces, meaning golf courses. And so, you know, you really have to read between the lines. When they say rebuilding, they generally mean rebuilding it in a gentrified sort of way, so that it's fixed up to the level where they would be able to charge astronomical rent and not have it be affordable to the people who had been living there previously.
Okay, the levees that they're not getting funding for are in the lower Ninth Ward?
That's correct. They're getting the funding to have it finished for a Category 3 hurricane by 2012.
When would these supposed golf courses be put in?
They're planning on having more official plans once they go through with their intended plan of buying up the lower Ninth Ward, so that they can, you know, slowly take their time in clearing the area, meaning bulldoze homes, and restore the levees. And then once the levees are restored, they will be able to present this new area with mixed-income housing and, you know, green spaces and all of that, sort of for a, you know, a completed area that they would be able to turn into a success story, really, you know, to show the world that they've recovered from this natural disaster. Many of the residents are getting together to try and make plans, at least come together to know that they are all planning on staying, and try and build support and organize themselves. And at the same time, it's difficult to do that because many of those residents are still stuck out in Houston and Atlanta, New York and California, Anchorage, Alaska. And so in order to get in touch with all of those residents before they're found and, you know, the proposal is made to buy their house, there's a big challenge of trying to get in touch with them to let them know that there's support and there's other residents who want to come home. It means that on the weekends, it's a time when people are coming home to visit their houses, and that's a crucial time to really talk to residents down there and ask them if they'd like to stay and help them connect with other people who are trying to stay so that they can support each other.
And how is Common Ground involved in this?
Common Ground was given a house by one of the residents who lived on the same block as the barge that was in the canal that busted through the levee during the storm. And we gutted that house out on the first of the year and started a small distribution center down there for people who were coming back. So that house is really sort of another anchor point of the community where people are able to come together and hold meetings and connect with one another since the storm.
What are people outside of New Orleans being asked to do to assist people down there at this point?
The way that Common Ground is doing it is that we have continued road trip relief campaigns where we reach out to people in other cities, college students, and ask them if on their Christmas or, you know, winter or spring break they're able to come down and lend a hand in helping to clean someone's house out or to get on the website commongroundrelief.org and donate money and really to directly support residents in that by either coming down to volunteer, to help gut houses, to help distribute food and water, or if they can't do that, to donate money.
A few weeks back, I guess, there were some showdowns between residents in the Ninth Ward and bulldozers that were brought in. Can you talk a little bit about that and what's happened since?
What happened was bulldozers were sighted clearing lots that had, you know, that were people's private property, and because there was groups of people who were keeping an eye out for these bulldozers, they were able to get on the phone and contact other people who showed up and arrived at the scene, and because it was illegal for the bulldozers to be doing that, they were able to stop the bulldozing. And there hasn't been bulldozing since then because the dialogue between residents and members of Common Ground and the officials it created an agreement and an understanding that they weren't going to continue that until they sort of had publicly announced that they would begin more bulldozing.
Who is speaking for the residents, given that so many of them are scattered throughout the country at this point?
There's people who, representatives in the Lower Ninth, who are really strong advocates for the people, and local residents who really have come out and taken a stand for their community and for their neighborhood, and they're really a very very vocal people who really represent the community.
Local elections are soon to be held. How is that affecting everything that's going on at this point?
It's very unlikely that Ray Nagin will be reelected because of the way that he handled things during the storm. And so right now, we've got a little bit more leeway because he's trying to be reelected. So we've had successes when we went out and rallied and protested, successes in terms of the people who were staying in hotels with FEMA vouchers who were supposed to be kicked out on February 12th, but because of many people getting together and fighting that, people were able to get extended stays till March 1st. And that is more likely that it happened because the elections are coming up and the mayor wants to look good to be reelected. But at the same time, it's very unlikely that he will be reelected, even despite all of that. The elections were supposed to be in February, and they were postponed until late spring, early summer. Governor Kathleen Blanco, she visited the Lower Ninth Ward about a week ago, and before then had been very vague about her support. And she visited it with about four other buses of diplomats, and they came down to the Lower Ninth Ward and were met by a group of residents who came to address their needs. Common Ground and a few other relief organizations met with the residents, and together we marched through the streets of the Lower Ninth Ward to the buses and were held at the check by the National Guard, blocking us from the governor. And we went around the block, and the media was all there. And because, you know, there were about 100 residents and supporters there from so many media, they couldn't stop us anymore. And we went in and surrounded the governor and residents. Many were able to voice their concerns and speak with her directly. And she made promises that she would try to get the electricity turned back on in FEMA trailers. And because of those promises, she's had to stick with them, that they were documented. There's talk of such things happening, talk of trailers, talk of electricity.
What about funds from the government of the United States?
Well, that's a very good opportunity to expose one speech that George Bush gave that was stating that he didn't feel that New Orleans was responsible enough to get sufficient funding in rebuilding, and that's why the city has had to look to other countries to get funding.
So are you saying that Bush is deliberately denying funding to New Orleans?
Well, I would say that because he mentioned that in New Orleans was not qualified to get that funding, that's a pretty blatant exposure of the fact that he does not intend to fund the rebuilding process.
Do you and Common Ground and others see this as an attempt to essentially drive people into the arms of these insurance companies and real estate speculators?
Very much so, because it's setting up walls, and it's really setting traps so that it discourages people from coming back, because it's going to be so long before it's safe to return, because the levees still are not restored and there's still lots of toxins in the environment. So it's discouraging to move back. Really, this deal looks like a good solution because it's, you know, it's matching the value of their house, and that would allow them to you know, be able to start at least somewhere else, wherever that happens to be. It's really in an attempt to buy people out. It's really very important to adamantly encourage those governors to really take a strong stand in trying to get the levees rebuilt. People could call the governor, Kathleen Blanco, and people could go onto a government website to get that number and to send a message saying, please, in support of the residents of New Orleans, please restore the levees. That's something that anyone can do from anywhere. I would encourage people from all over the country to continue to do research on the situation and to not give up on New Orleans, to not forget it, to remember that that is a part of this country and a part of this country that has the strongest culture, despite really the fact that it's one of the very poorest states in the nation. I encourage people to donate. I encourage people to write articles, to come here and visit, to volunteer. I encourage people to stay updated and to contact their representatives and the representatives down here in Louisiana and advocate strongly for the rights of these people and their identity.
Anna Ritter, volunteer with the Common Ground Relief Collective in New Orleans. That's commongroundrelief.org. Many of the refugees from New Orleans are in Houston, Texas. Last weekend, they held a forum which was broadcast on KPFT Pacifica Radio. Here's some of the voices from that forum.
Today's town hall meeting focuses on what Katrina survivors can do to protect their right of return. Even as we speak, thousands of Katrina survivors are being evicted from hotels in Houston and throughout the nation. To bring us greetings and welcome, we have Sheila Jackson Lee, a six-term Democrat from Houston, who represents Texas' 18th Congressional District in Houston and is a co-sponsor of legislation to rebuild the Gulf Coast in the wake of Hurricane Katrina.
Thank you very much for having me, and it's a pleasure to be able to welcome all of the very important speakers, presenters. Most importantly, it is, I think, our challenge to take this town hall meeting around the nation and to empower those Katrina survivors who are placed and located many, many miles away from home. I heard earlier today that we were fast to go into Iraq, but slow to go in after Katrina. What a shameless posture for America to be in, that we would go in to perpetrate war, but we could not go in to save lives. And so the message at this time in this town hall meeting is to emphasize that we're here to not only rebuild lives, but to save lives in the future, and to be able to energize those Katrina survivors and communities that embrace them all over the nation. Interestingly enough, those of us who have had the absolute shocking experience of going in after the aftermath, simply walking the streets, being told of houses that were in place, families that were in place, and taking your eyes and looking down a block or around the corner and seeing that house placed in one area, whole, doors open, family, warm response, now literally obliterated with the scraps of wood many miles or blocks away. That shows what happens to people's lives when their government fails them. As a member of the United States Congress, I have seen the failures of our own government. In fact, the recent report that came out by a partisan committee indicated that there was complete collapse, an initiative of failure by the federal government. All of the testimony of the last week has indicated that not only former FEMA Director Michael Brown, but Secretary Chertoff and other administration officials knew about the catastrophic devastation that was facing those who were now in the eye of the storm. So today, I think, as we have already reflected on where we have come from, we've already reflected on a FEMA director that is no longer there. We've already reflected on the failure of the Secretary of Homeland Security. And, of course, in the recent week, I asked for his firing. And hopefully there will be a recognition that there has to be accountability. But it is important to go forward and, as I said, to begin to put the pieces together. I would like to have and offer, in my humble opinion, that the theme of these town hall meetings be the right of return. You know, there's a lot of discussion about transportation and housing, health care. All of these items are crucial. But if you do not empower people to come home, to begin to be on the ground and to ask the questions, where are the transportation modes? Where are the housing modes? Where are the health care modes? Then they're only a distant sound in people's minds. Then people begin to manipulate their property, begin to talk about eminent domain, and begin to design or put a design on their property because they're not there. And so the words that I offer here, bring the survivors home. Make the government bring everyone who desires to come home. out of them coming home will be the building of houses, hospitals, schools, transportation modes, and community. I welcome you, and I hope you will provoke, as well as you will draw upon the government and others to respond and to respond now.
Thank you. Facilitating our panel, Dr. Gloria Wilder Braithwaite. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to your comments.
Thank you so much. This is a wonderful night and a sad night at the same time. We should not have to be here, but we have to be here. And the beauty is that we've all come together, as we do so well, to unify and to take care of our own. And that means that we take care of all who need our help. You know, I wanted to start with just a small statement, just a couple of sentences about something that I hear nationally. I travel a lot doing anti-poverty work and health care. And, you know, one of the real shocks about what happened with Katrina is the fact that we have not acknowledged that those same set of circumstances exist in every major city in the United States. Now, it might not be flood that happens in the other cities. It may be an earthquake, right? Could be fire, some in L.A. or someplace like that, right? It might be a terrorist attack in certain of our metropolitan cities. But the reality of extreme poverty and the conditions that cause so many people to not have a way out actually exists in all of our major cities. And that is one of the reasons why it is so critical that this not become just, and I hate to put it this way, but just a Gulf Coast issue. It is not a Gulf Coast issue. This is about what it means to be a citizen of the United States. And it is about what we will do to protect our citizens within our borders. And it is about what we define citizenship as. If you are poor in the United States, are you less of a citizen and therefore entitled to less protection? I think before Katrina happened, we would have all answered that question, no. But after it happened, and as those of us around the nation watched in horror as you guys struggled to survive, that all of us had to question ourselves and say, what does it mean? And is being poor in America an excuse to be left out of the disaster plans? So we're going to start with the panel. And we're going to go panelist by panelist, and we're going to take about 2 minutes to talk about this issue of the work that we have to do, but also the connection that we see between what happened in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast and what could happen nationally. And if you don't mind, I'm going to start at the far end and move our way forward, okay? So, Dr. Taylor, if you could give us some insight.
Well, thank you for your question, and I want to say thank you for inviting me to this conversation. As you were asking the question, I was thinking about myself, my physician colleagues, all of my middle-class colleagues from New Orleans who are dispersed and who have lost everything, and answering, well, if it was about being poor, I guess we would be in better shape. But the black middle class in New Orleans was affected maybe in a little bit different way from the poor. Maybe we weren't in shelters, but our right to vote and our right to return is being threatened equally. So it's probably a number of things that are at stake here. And on top of all that, we are suffering deep losses. And part of the deep losses that we are suffering is not just houses and land. It's many of our elders who were left and who've died and who haven't been identified. And I believe that part of the next steps has to involve a healing around what has happened to our elders and how we need to do something in respect in terms of their burial. I know there are many, many issues. I'm living those issues every day. I live in a dormitory from a beautiful home to a dormitory room. But there are deeper issues than my house and my FEMA check. There are issues that I think that have to promote healing in order for us to move forward.
Thank you so much. Mr. Edwards?
Good evening, and thank you for inviting me here. I represent ACORN, and last week we had a successful rally in Washington, D.C., where we met with members from the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate. We were very thankful that we were able to meet with Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, Congressman Al Green, and Congressman Gene Green from Houston. We thank them very much for opening their doors and listening to us in our issues and concerns. We strongly support House Bill 4197, which is comprehensive and it grants and incentives that are similar to what some of the victims of the World Trade Center tragedy received. And we're hoping and we will fight strongly with the caucus to get that bill passed. There are two major things that we wanted to accomplish out of our trip to Washington. One is dealing with the fact that housing in the area of those people who live in public housing, we don't think that their concerns have really been addressed. It was very disheartening to hear the head of HUD right after the hurricane state that he felt as though New Orleans would never be as black as it used to be. I think that's a very disingenuous statement to say about the residents of New Orleans. Secondly, we wanted some accountability, not just from the federal government, but also from the private sector. Millions of dollars have been raised through nonprofit organizations and other private entities, but till this day, we still don't have a good accountability of where those funds are going to. So those were the two major issues besides our support for House Bill 4197. Thank you.
Ms. Harden.
Well, thank you for your question, and it's really, I want to just bring 2 points in response to that. Our organization, Advocates for Environmental Human Rights, we're a nonprofit public interest law firm, and we focus on reforming the U.S. environmental regulatory system because it causes people to be subjected to environmental racism. And when you talk about what poor and, in particular, people of color in this country are up against in terms of being vulnerable to disasters, there's no greater example of that than looking at where oil refineries, contaminated sites, brown fields are located, and seeing that those locations are where African Americans, Latino, Native Americans, and Asian people live, and some poor whites. And so we're all, as we go about our daily lives, we're all subject to a disaster of some sort just based on our race. That's a statistical fact. And so we thought the best way to deal with this was looking at the structural systemic cause for that and the fact that the way we protect the environment in the United States is one where it doesn't require safe distances, it doesn't require human health protections. Instead, it allows toxic polluting industries to do whatever the hell they want and get away with it and make those operations then codified as a regulation for environmental protection. Dealing with Hurricane Katrina, there are a zillion and one needs for displaced residents. And there's not one need that's greater than another need, in my point of view. The one thing that knits everything together, I think, is looking at what the United States government's policy is for respecting the human rights of people who are displaced by tsunami or natural disasters or conflicts in other parts of the world, and what they're doing here in the United States. What we're advocating for is for all displaced residents to learn more about the U.S. policies and demand that kind of protection for our human rights and our dignity.
Thank you so much. Now, I've probably been torturing your name, Wilson. Please say your last name for me.
Okay. It's Bovland.
Bovland. Yeah. Okay, I think I said Boulevard. See, nope. that's the Brooklyn in me. You're going to have to excuse that.
Don't feel bad. That's a running joke around my office right
okay.
now.
Thank you, Mr. Bovland.
And before I can tell you exactly what we're doing in New Orleans around education, I need to first paint a brief picture for you exactly what's going on in New Orleans in terms of education. 2 days after Hurricane Katrina, the State Department of Education said that Orleans Parish was going to, no schools in Orleans Parish would open up during this particular school year. The state legislature amended the charter school law and applied it only to New Orleans, and in doing so, they took away 102 out of 115 schools. The state legislature also, in effect, created a charter school district for the entire Orleans Parish and took over, as I said, 102 schools. The state legislature also removed the collective bargaining agreement from those charter schools. The State Board of Education and the superintendent removed 85% of the funding for the New Orleans public schools that were allocated by the state. All of the state recoveries, the state schools were put under what's known as the recovery district. And the recovery district at one point even refused to open up schools or to allow the Orleans Parish School Board to use some schools because of the overcrowdedness. At this point, only four schools have opened up in Orleans Parish this particular school year. Another thing is that the school board put all of its employees on what's known as a disaster leave without pay. Disaster leave without pay, which is a violation of the state law. As of today, as I said before, the school board has only opened four schools. To add insult to injury, the school board chartered 13 of its remaining schools and turned it over to a private entity and then did away with the collective bargaining agreement. They did not allow the parents or the teachers of those schools to vote on whether or not collective bargaining they wanted to have those schools chartered. And to add insult to injury, in December, the school board voted to terminate all of its employees, approximately 7,500 individuals, effective January 31st of 2006. This was after removing the health insurance away from those individuals. And I'll get into that a little bit later on during our discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to ask Representative Sheila Jackson Lee to give us some comments on the question that's on the table, the impact of poverty on what's happened in Katrina.
I think the theme that you started out with is an indictment of what we have allowed to exist in the United States and the cancer that existed of poverty. And I want to say to my dear sister, she's absolutely right. The impact of Katrina faced economic levels of all types. A massive healing is more than appropriate. Just as an aside, we have not seen the mass funerals, but we know that people have buried their dead alone, without camera, without apologies, without presence of people who failed them, and they still are hurting and are in pain. We also know, as those of us have visited, that barges are on top of homes and school buses still, and so we don't know the remains of our loved ones who still may be there. That remains, as I listen to the panelists, and I hope that as we go forward in the empowering of individuals, Reverend Deli, that we will talk about the commemoration and celebration, if you will, and honoring of those who've lost their lives so that there can be healing. But I want to put poverty in context of people, action, unity, and community. And I cannot say enough about the theme that I hope will be a strong theme, because it plays into my brother's comments about closed schools. No one knows that literally the schools have been obliterated, not by buildings being lost, but by concept and policy. There are no schools in New Orleans. That says that we want no people to come back to New Orleans. Children are life. They breathe us. They give us life. They are our future, our destiny. So when you close schools, when you charterize schools, if I might, when you say that out of 115 there's two or three, then you're saying that we do not intend to make New Orleans New Orleans. We do not intend to have the ancestors rest so that their children can come back home. And so I just wanted to simply leave you as this discussion proceeds, and please include members of the United States Congress who have as their advocacy the right to return. But we need your energy. We need your constant refrain that we must have those in the 44 states be given the resources to move back home. We must make it known that a one-way ticket was given, something that my sister earlier spoke to, the migration or the pushing away where others never were able to come back home. This is what has been said to the 44 that were 44 states. This is the one-way ticket where people landed in D.C. and said, I didn't know where I was going until I got there. So I would like for you to push for a 1-800 number. Insist that the government put up a 1-800 number, a website, so that all who are scattered can get on that one site to say, I am here and I want resources to bring me home. We will work with you in that manner, but let the refrain be, in addition to the housing, I could go on about, and I see the time, Houston's needs, and I will look forward to TMO joining this panel, but Houston's needs, and I will argue with Secretary Chertoff about giving us our money so that we can provide for those who are here. But unless the theme is to have those who lived in the region come home, then the fight for housing, the extinguishing of poverty in that area, and all of these issues, the environment, the healing, will not prevail, because they will say, where are the people? Where are the people?
We want to thank you. Representative Jackson Lee has to leave us now, but we really want to thank you for your comments and participation. We need that kind of push. You know, we need to know that the leaders in Washington, D.C. recognize that they represent not only their district, but they represent the interests of the nation when they're voted into office. And let's all remember that. That you just don't call the congressional people who are in the Black Caucus alone. Right, we call all of the congressional members and bring them to task and to say, you know, you represent all of us when you go to Washington, D.C. We thank you so much for having the courage to stand for us.
Thank Pacifica Radio and Operation Gulf Coast for your efforts, the coalition.
Thank you.
We're gonna
continue with our panel. Juanita Bailey is a member of the United Teachers of New Orleans and a Katrina survivor. We'd love to have your input on this topic.
Well, right now I'm working out of the Harris County AFL-CIO office, and my national organization, American Federation of Teachers, has sent me to that worker center to provide assistance to members of the labor organizations. What we're doing is providing assistance to our union members. But one of the things that I'm also doing right now is I'm basically conducting a survey of those people who are coming in and finding out what their needs are. And when you speak to someone on the phone or in person, right now the main concern is jobs. These people are without jobs and they're concerned, you know, can I pay my bills? You know, what about my medicine? What about medical assistance? These things are a big concern right now, and they're getting assistance from the city of Houston, but then, you know, their concern is what happens after. And as far as being able to go home, you know, many are concerned that they don't have the money. They don't have the funding to go back home. You know, I asked them, you know, when are you going to, you know, are you going to return to Louisiana? You know, do you have any plans or do you plan on staying in Houston? And some of them are like, you know, I don't know. I don't know if there's any opportunity. You know, if I try to go back, where am I going to stay? Where am I going to live? So we're looking at a situation where people who were once thriving and had jobs and, you know, schools for their children to go to, they have nothing. It's all undecided, and they don't know what they're going to do from day to day. So I'm going to speak on some other things that we're trying to do as far as labor, helping individuals. But I think that until they listen to, you know, the powers that be, listen to the people and understand that they do want to go home. I mean, I have so many people just saying, you know, I'm grateful that Houston took me in, but, you know, I really wish I can get back home. And, you know, they don't know because there's so many roadblocks, you know. So that's where we are right now.
Thank you so much. Next, we're going to hear from Jim. Jim Lefton of the United Steelworkers Union.
What struck me, good evening, but what struck me tonight as I was listening to up and down the panel was, how could this happen in America? How could this kind of a disaster happen in America, and what has our government done to help us? And I think the resounding answer to that is little or nothing. We as United Steelworkers, we didn't wait for the government. We got it. We got out and started training people, having people know what they needed to do when they returned back to the areas, tried to help people with clothing, with food, with shelter. And what really bothers me about this whole situation is that we're supposed to be the most powerful nation on the face of the earth, and yet we had no idea how to handle this kind of an emergency, and we still don't. And the United Steelworkers are on the forefront, as far as I'm concerned, on the labor movement, in trying to return people back to their homes and back to their normalcy. We had thousands and thousands of members who were affected by this disaster, and we have tried to take care of our own, as we often do in the labor movement. But we've also reached out to the communities, and I think the thing that at the end of the day that has to come out of this effort is that we can't allow this kind of a disaster to ever happen again to the people of the United States. We have got to make our politicians accountable. We've got to get in their face and make them understand that they work for us. They don't work for Halliburton. They don't work for Brown and Root. They work for the people of the United States.
You brought up a number of very powerful statements that I was tagging on to. One is, you know, taking care of each other. I like how you said the labor movement has taken care of each other, as they always have, but they also reached out to take care of others who were not in the unions. And that's a powerful thing. And the other thing is the issue of, and I'm just going to put it right on the table, the black-white issue, the race issue in what is happening, realizing that when catastrophes like this happen, it doesn't just happen to one culture, and it doesn't just affect one body of people, and we have to unify. We're going to go to an audience member, and I'd like you to just state your name and tell us your comment.
Maurice Johnson. We started with a question about how it affected the poor, and then we talked to a doctor. So it couldn't be just affecting poor. It's affecting class. It's the poor versus the class in America, and it seems like we're coming to one class, and that's the class that has, and the class that's going to make sure that they have. The comments have been so varied that I see a fragmented America. And I'm trying to figure out, where can we find that Rosa Parks moment? That one thing that will unite us, black, white, steel workers' unions, education, poor, rich, minority, majority, and make us say, this is what America was supposed to be, and we're going to go back to the grassroots and make America what it should be. Can we come up with a Rosa Parks moment out of not just Katrina, but everything that this administration and that's happening right now?
Thank you so much for your comment. And it actually leads us into our next segment on what do we do, all right? What are the solutions? Because you know, I personally believe that it doesn't. It's not one person. There's not one leader who's going to stand up and fix this. There are millions of leaders across the United States, tens of millions of leaders across the United States who are going to have to say never again, and mean it. And use their actions, make sure their actions follow their words. So let's start back with the panel, and we're going to talk a little bit about what are some of the solutions. What are your organizations doing? What can people do? We'll start at the end with Dr. Taylor.
I think one of the common denominators for all of this has to involve our health. And that just last week in New Orleans, physicians from all over the country came to organize health fair that was held at the zoo, much to my disagreement, but, you know, it was at the zoo. And people that are in New Orleans with the no red lights, stop signs, and all the problems that are there stood in line all night. Some people brought blankets and slept on the ground at the zoo to be in line to get access to health care. So there have been job fairs. There have been all kinds of fairs. But what about our health? We can rebuild and not live to enjoy it.
We have folks coming and sharing with us today. And in the audience here today, we have a state representative from New Orleans, District 97, Arthur Morrell is here and will be with us for the rest of the evening. Joining our panel is John Henry, who represents Metropolitan Organization, which really represents the survivors from New Orleans who are here in Houston. Mr. Henry, I'm going to shoot straight to you, if you don't mind. Give us a little bit of feedback on what you've been hearing. He's been in the audience the entire time we've been discussing.
What I've heard is the continued neglect by all officials, quite frankly, from the top on down to the bottom, how they've disregarded New Orleans and left it barren. I heard the doctor reference the lack of medical attentions that's there. From our mayor on his gallant with his comeback to New Orleans, the gumbo is missing, and this and that sort of thing with the toxic soil that exists. Listen, quite frankly, Louisiana has been a joke for a long period of time. The educational system sucks. It's left our people without the ability to think as a whole, to impact decisions that have affected us in the past, the present, and will be in the future. A few of the things that the Metropolitan Organization, which is the umbrella to the Greater New Orleans United Voices, has done is enabled a vehicle for some of the survivors to organize in a way to address the issues that are affecting us here in Houston and as well as in New Orleans. So I'll touch on that a little bit more in my next opportunity.
Thank you. Mr. Edwards, we're jumping to solutions. We're really going to focus on what are we doing, what can we do. What would you comment on?